It's 7:07 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, we are going to be talking about a very important issue this half hour, and that is affordable housing. We've all seen these homeless camps that have popped up around the Twin Cities, and both cities, St. Paul and Minneapolis, are struggling to adopt plans to provide more affordable housing so that people can really live the kind of lives that we'd like to have everyone live here in Minnesota. Karen Allen is a St. Paul resident and volunteer for Neighbors for More Neighbors and for MN, and she is joining us right now. And St. Paul also has a 2040 comprehensive plan. Karen, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, well, tell us about the St. Paul plan. And, you know, I know that, in Minneapolis, one of the things they've been talking about is allowing, changing zoning so that you can have more triplexes, fourplexes, that kind of thing. Is St. Paul sort of in a similar mode there?
Yes, absolutely. So one thing that St. Paul really focused on was neighborhood nodes, which is a really cool concept where areas that have strong transportation and already are seeing an increase in growth and density and population are going to be exactly ripe for the type of increased duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, and other small multifamily dwellings that our neighborhoods would all benefit from.
Right. And this is something that's happening to a certain degree organically. I know, like in neighborhoods, by some of the trains, the new light rails that have come up,
yes,
you've got all these apartments and just popping up organically. But is the city going to try and do something to encourage that?
Yeah, so St. Paul wants to support the investment that's already going on privately and publicly in these great locations like the light rail along University. There's the bus rapid transit on Snelling. And there's a lot of intersections that already are seeing that type of growth. And St. Paul is planning on building on that and supporting that type of future.
All right. And have you seen it? Because I've spent a little bit more time sort of in the Bloomington area. When you've got like right by the light rail, I feel like every time I go down there, I see like a new apartment building going up. But some of those apartment buildings are very expensive.
Yeah, so along University and along the Green Line in St. Paul, there's been some really great affordable developments. There's one at Victoria and University that provides affordable housing for teenagers and young people experiencing housing issues. There's also been building for senior citizens looking for affordable long-term care options along that same transit route. And so St. Paul's looking to provide great housing options for all types of people, young, old, immigrant, longtime resident. And we're seeing that organically, and St. Paul is embracing it.
All right. Let me ask you, though, about the housing for teens, because I think most of us would assume that especially somebody under 18 would be living with a family member, hopefully. But tell us about that, because I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, I don't have any specific connection with that project, except that it was recently just finished. It's called Brownstones. It's at Victoria, and they're attempting to provide really great services for young people who are experiencing housing issues, which is a real issue in all of our communities, where young people maybe have to, you know, move outside of their family situation.
Wow.
for whatever reason. But I don't have any personal knowledge of those projects.
But what's the name of it? Because I'd like to look into that a little bit more.
It's called Brownstone, and
Brownstone,
it's at University and Victoria.
Got it. Okay. And then how about the senior housing? Because this is something that is really an important issue, you know, affordable senior housing. And I know that more seniors, I think there's a trend certainly in Minneapolis of empty nesters and people actually deciding that they want to live downtown in their retirement years. Is
yeah.
that something that you're – but obviously – again, a lot of these things are expensive. Is that something that you're seeing in St. Paul, too?
Yeah, so one of St. Paul's top priorities in the 2040 plan is aging in community. So providing great, affordable, community-connected, vibrant living places for seniors who maybe are not interested in living in their same big family home that they've had for decades, but still want to be in that same community, close to the shops and the restaurants and the theaters that they love.
Right. Well, and that's something I think that we're seeing a trend in, you know, completely. In terms of, you know, the residential areas, because this is something that's been very controversial in Minneapolis, is the notion of having more fourplexes and more diverse housing, or to allow an existing home to be converted into a duplex or even a triplex. Is that something that St. Paul's looking at as well?
Yes, it is a thing that St. Paul is considering. And, you know, I think people definitely find the wording scary, triplex, quadplex. But if you drive down many of our neighborhoods in St. Paul, there's perfectly organic looking duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes that were built in 1910 or 1915 that have good density, lovely places to live right in those same neighborhoods that all of us want to live in. So St. Paul wants to support that, promote it, and re-legalize it. Some of it, you know, was able to be built 100 years ago, and just with the changes in zoning that have happened decade after decade, those living places we wouldn't be able to even build again. And so part of it's almost looking back to the historic way of doing things to allow better flexibility as people's living situations changes.
All right. We're chatting with Karen Allen. She's a St. Paul resident and a volunteer with Neighbors for More Neighbors, N4MN. And is this, I guess, the thing that has people, I think nervous is a fair assessment, is the issue of more density. And for some people, that's something that they welcome and think could, you know, add to their neighborhood and their community. But other people are nervous about that.
Yeah, we hear that all the time.
Yeah, and what do you say? I mean, what is, in, obviously you're somebody that's looking at the affordable housing issue and talking about density. What do you tell people, and what are some of the concerns or misconceptions you feel about the issue of density?
Yeah, to me, one of the really big benefits of density, and historically, actually, both our cities, I think, are not near even the maximum population they had decades ago. And so we haven't surpassed yet where our city has been in the past. But if we think about density, what we're thinking about is people living in our cities, which is shopping at our stores, eating at our restaurants, paying taxes, and supporting really vibrant growth and city services that all of us really want to take advantage of. St. Paul has a bit of a funding issue when you consider how many nonprofits exist in St. Paul, so hospitals, churches, universities, schools, and so the tax base really is how many people live in this awesome place. So if we are able to provide stable, affordable housing, we're really increasing the tax base, and we're increasing opportunity for people to live here and contribute to our neighborhood. But change is super slow. So there's not going to be a wave of all these houses turning into, you know, overcrowded or overly dense areas. And that was one of St. Paul's thoughts, was to focus on nodes that feel really organic to current residents.
Right. And what do you think is the biggest misconception about the whole issue of density and making sort of a denser housing stock?
I think people are afraid of rising costs, for one thing. A lot of really dense cities have rising costs, whereas what we're planning on, and what, you know, economists would say, is that if you build enough housing supply to keep up with demand, then we'll actually keep prices in line. And so that's one of our goals, is by building more access, more housing units, we'll be able to keep housing prices down.
Right. But, you know, I do feel, though, that in some areas, especially in downtown Minneapolis, which is really, you know, a thriving, bustling community, you've got an awful lot of very expensive condos and apartments that are really pricey.
Yes. I mean, and anything when you build it brand new is expensive. That's for sure. And so, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, but yeah, the second best time is today. And so if we're looking not just for this year, but if we're looking 20 years out, St. Paul in 2040, we have to start building that housing now so that in 20 years, we have an even better supply of affordable housing.
Right. We're chatting with Karen Allen. She's a St. Paul resident and volunteers with Neighbors for More Neighbors. We have to take a quick break, but I'd like to talk about keeping families and the trend of families deciding not to go to the suburbs anymore and to stay in the cities. It's something that's happening across the country, and obviously that's something that groups like Neighbors for Neighbors are hoping to promote as well. So keep it here. News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 7:20 in the evening here on News Talk 830. Chatting with Karen Allen. She's a St. Paul resident and volunteers with Neighbors for More Neighbors. I want to ask you about keeping families in the city. How is Neighbors for Neighbors, for More Neighbors promoting that, or how is St. Paul trying to keep families in the city?
You know, it's great for people to have options is really what our stance is. And what I think St. Paul is promoting is that, you know, some people move to the suburbs because they love that lifestyle, but people are also living more and more in the city because they like the shorter commutes. They like the tighter knit communities. And, St. Paul's just trying to balance all the different housing needs of all our different families.
Right. Well, and I think for a lot of younger people too. I mean, I know a lot of people in their 20s who don't have a car. You know, just it's not because they couldn't, you know, afford one, but they just don't want a car. They like to be able to bike places and walk places, and I think that's a trend that certainly we're seeing in many cities, including St. Paul, right?
Yeah, St. Paul is really promoting a strong transportation network, you know, whether it's people that, you know, could afford a car but would rather not have the hassle, or people that can't afford a car in their current situation. St. Paul's seen that reducing the vehicles that are on the road and the miles traveled improves health outcomes for communities, improves neighborhood sort of vibrancy, and is better, especially for families. If you want to be able to take your kid on the bus, that should be a absolutely easy option for people, and St. Paul's working towards that.
Right. In terms of promoting Neighbors for More Neighbors, what how can people get involved, and what kinds of, you know, events is your organization have and is the city sponsoring so that people can be part of this discussion?
So Neighbors for More Neighbors originally started out in Minneapolis, and they are still very strong in Minneapolis. The easiest thing to do would probably be to just Google them. They have a web presence. They're out at a lot of public fairs, like the Open Streets Minneapolis type events. And the St. Paul branch is not even officially started. You're talking to one of the early organizers. We're attempting to have our first meeting at the end of the month. One of the strategic visions of Neighbors for More Neighbors is that any community that wants to have a similar organization really builds it from within, because ideas and solutions and challenges in Minneapolis don't apply to St. Paul all the time, and vice versa. So there's a group of us in St. Paul who are looking to organize and hear from all the different constituents of people that live in St. Paul, work in St. Paul, would like to live or work in St. Paul. And we don't even necessarily have a website yet, but you are welcome to look at Neighbors for More Neighbors in Minneapolis, and they'll put you in contact with us.
You know, and you raised an interesting point here. From your perspective, what are some of the differences that might work in Minneapolis but not in St. Paul?
You know, a lot of it comes down to just geography, the way our cities are laid out, the different neighborhood configurations. You know, we're really fortunate. We have the Little Mekong Market. We have the Rondo neighborhood. Minneapolis has, other awesome, diverse neighborhoods. But the challenges that apply are just different sometimes. And additionally, no one likes sort of a one-size-fits-all solution. Nobody feels that's a good fit for them. For example, St. Paul is really looking at how can we tie ourselves into the river better, whereas Minneapolis, the river runs right through part of it. And so it's just simple differences that may seem almost superficial at first, but as you're looking, you realize that, yeah, it really changes policy.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that was certainly at the fore in the Minneapolis debate over their 2040 plan was the concern going back to density was that a denser, you know, more triplexes or, you know, duplexes, that it would actually negatively affect property values. Are you hearing that concern? And what's your response to that?
We haven't heard a huge concern about that in St. Paul. I think people are more concerned about the rise in housing costs. I hope that everyone that has their concerns would, you know, reach out to their local city council member and make comments on that, because it's something we do have to think about.
Right. Because, I mean, it just was part of the debate. I know that there was some evidence to suggest that in other cities that hasn't happened and that you know, the neighborhoods can remain as vital. And you mentioned that you know, historically when you drive around St. Paul, you're seeing duplexes that have been there for years and things have gone really well.
Yes.
All right. Well, anyway, so you're suggesting people go to the Neighbors for More Neighbors website, and you guys don't have a separate one yet for St. Paul.
But nope. Yep.
But is there information about how to reach people who are starting up things in St. Paul?
Just the contact, like the contact information page would be the best place to reach out. They're also on Facebook. They're on Twitter. That's probably the best way to reach out.
Okay. Well, listen, Karen Allen from volunteer with Neighbors for More Neighbors, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right. And this debate certainly will continue. All right, folks, Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. We have a lot more going on here on this edition of Saturday Night with Esme. And we'll be chatting here in the next half hour with Michael Roventheim. He is the MSP chapter social media breakfast and how local companies look at when it comes to their social media footprints. Later this month, an event will take place to discuss what to expect in 2019 for business, how you can get involved. We're also going to be talking with Erica Rivers, with the Minnesota State Parks and Trails. She's going to be talking about the candlelight events this month. These are really cool. We've shot them and taken pictures of them, for WCCO TV, and these are really, really pretty if you don't know about them. And then in our 8 o'clock hour, I'll be visiting with Professor Stephen Scheer of Carleton College. And he's going to be talking about, obviously, this extraordinary shutdown of the federal government and also what to expect from the Minnesota legislature this year. Will the new governor and the new legislature, the new democratically controlled House, will they be able to get along better? Will they be able to get, you know, more things passed? We were talking earlier about tax policy. And the fact was that the Minnesota legislature was not able, well, they were able to pass a tax conformity bill, but then the governor vetoed it because of some problems. Will it be a smoother operation in St. Paul this coming year? So we'll talk about all those issues with Steve Scheer coming up. And also want to let you know on WCCO TV Sunday morning, I've got two live guests at 10:30 a.m. They are both members of Congress in Minnesota, Congresswoman Betty McCollum and also Congressman Tom Emmer, obviously a Democrat and a Republican. We're going to talk about the shutdown. And it's interesting because these two representatives easily won their reelections. We didn't focus a lot on their reelection bids because they did win so easily. And we knew they were going to win that so easily because those districts are heavily Democratic and in Tom Emmer's case, heavily Republican, but they both influential positions within their party. So we'll talk to them about their views of the government shutdown. And do they feel or agree with the president that this shutdown could in fact last months, even years, is what the president said yesterday. So a lot to talk about there. But first, we need to take a break, and we'll give you some weather. And then when we come back, we'll talk about a new social networking event where you can go and find out how to up your social media skills and how it could help you in business. Networking and social media. It is part of our reality in this day and age, and there is an organization that can help you with that. It is called the Social Media Breakfast, Minneapolis St. Paul Chapter. I had not heard about this organization, and I am fascinated to have one of its founders or co-organizers, Michael Roventheim, joining us right now. Michael, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Esme.
All right. Tell us about what is your organization?
Well, simply, we are connecting people and ideas, and we tend to do it over coffee and bacon. We choose a Friday.
And bacon's your mascot, according to this sheet?
People have considered it such, yes. our events always have some kind of bacon tie-in, and it's just sort of become sort of a calling card over the years. But we've been doing this for over 10 years now, since 2008. We have a speaker in every month. We try to keep the barrier for cost down quite low. Our tickets are only $15, and we meet somewhere in the Twin Cities, usually in the North Loop of Minneapolis lately, and we have a speaker or a panel on a different social topic. We have some networking. We have some bacon, and we explore the issues that way.
All right. Michael Roventheim is our guest. He is with the Social Media Breakfast Minneapolis St. Paul chapter. Are there chapters all over the place for this organization?
There are.
That's really cool.
It's sort of a loose collective, but it started in Boston in 2007 and started springing up all over the country. And there are, to this day, there are probably about 30 chapters nationwide and a few in Canada.
Okay. And when is your next event?
Our next event is the 25th of January, 8 to 10 in the morning in Minneapolis.
All right. And anybody can come. It's just $15.
Oh, absolutely.
For the, and what are some of the topics that you've covered in the past that you might have a speaker to talk about?
Oh, sure. So as I mentioned, we either have a single speaker or a panel usually, and we have talked about everything from sort of increasing your conversions, which is a rather dry technical topic, to more friendly things like budget-friendly video marketing or social media, making the case for social media resources in a larger organization, or exploring tips that nonprofits can use, for example.
Okay, and when you talk about conversions, is that getting more people to find you through social media?
Correct.
Okay, and tell us about that, because that's a big deal, isn't it?
It is, actually. The speaker we had for that month went through a series of case studies and sort of examples of how to increase the what they call lead funnels. So our speaker was Dave Meyer that month, and he talked about what is roughly considered an inbound marketing strategy. So driving traffic to your site, getting people to make the right decisions once they're there, and tracking them along the way.
Okay. And I would imagine how many people turn up for each of your events?
We have about an average of 100, 120 people a month.
Wow. Okay. Because I imagine this is really an essential part of being in business in this day and age.
It is, increasingly so. This is part of the reason our topic for January is social media trends, because we have discovered that through the years, really actionable, paying attention to social media trends in a way that is actionable and it takes into account what other companies are doing can really affect your bottom line, no matter what organization or what type of business you're in.
Are there some issues that really sort of people are most curious about or sort of wonder the most about or that you get more questions about than others?
That's a very good question. We tend to get a pretty good range. We have a very eclectic group of attendees and members that are in different industries across town here. Most of the time, it's how can they, stay current, use industry trends, use best practices, and just not look foolish.
And it's not, but well, let me ask you. But stay current. I mean, because this is an evolving world. You know, it's changing so rapidly. I mean, that's a tall order. I mean, you've got people who are struggling to do that, you know, all the time. Is that something that you know, people have questions about?
Oh, absolutely. And in some cases, just the connectivity is a first step in staying current. One of the trends we're going to be covering in January is actually this could be the year of the social CEO, of having the CEO and the head of your company more connected, more involved on social media, having a presence on LinkedIn, for example. Things like that are not only contributing to day-to-day employee satisfaction, but it's increasing communication between employees and upper management. And it's, for job seekers, a very, very important thing. People are starting to consider that when they look at a new company. How connected, connected and dedicated is the leadership.
Right. One of your future topics, though, is something that people might not think of. That is organic farming. Tell us about that. I think that's fascinating.
Actually, yes, that was actually one of our previous topics.
Okay.
But it is up there among the sort of eclectic things that we covered. We actually did a panel for that at one of the buildings in the state fairgrounds off season. So that was really an interesting one. And you know, what we do is we tend to focus on different industries in addition to just the technologies themselves because you never know what another company is doing or another organization is doing that will have some bearing to what you're doing. So because this is such an ever-changing field, learning by example has proven to be an excellent way to teach people and to share knowledge.
All right. We're talking with Michael Roventin. He is with the Social Media Breakfast Minneapolis-St. Paul chapter. And the monthly breakfast that you can go to, anybody can go to, is $15. You get the breakfast, you get the speakers. For instance, in the organic farming event, I imagine that some of it had to do with, you know, farming is you know, obviously a very difficult profession and something that's, you know, there's so many factors in terms of weather and, you know, all the kinds of issues you've got to deal with. I assume that some of that is connecting organic farmers through social media to find out what other people are doing.
Yes, that's certainly
or what's working or what's not working.
Exactly. There was a lot of discussion, I remember, on how to connect such as popular a topic as it is. It's still fairly niche in terms of the presence online and on social media. So there was a lot of conversation about how to connect the dots between potential customers who are interested in things like organic farming and farmers markets and sustainable living with those providers and those farmers.
How can people find you if they're, you know, listening to this and saying, God, this sounds like kind of something that'd be really kind of cool. I'd like to go and check that out.
Absolutely. The best place is our website, smbmsp.org. So that stands for Social Media Breakfast, Minneapolis, St. Paul. You could search for those for SMBMSP on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, what have you, and find us as well.
Right. But you also have podcasts. And do you actually stream your events, live stream them?
When we can. We absolutely do. And recently we've been also streaming them on Facebook Live as well.
Right. And in terms of, you know, how this is going, as you said that there's obviously a lot of interest. You're getting over 100 people at many of these events. Has the interest grown over the past few years?
It's changed. It's been fairly consistent from our point of view in terms of numbers, but the types of things that people are interested in and the types of positions of our attendees have really changed throughout the years. We started, as I mentioned, back in 2008, and we had a lot of people who had inherited social media roles, not officially, but they were the younger person in the organization, for example, and they were taking on more and more of the social roles in addition to their other stated position. Now, nowadays, we have people with social in their title, and representing, you know, many of the big names in Fortune 500 companies in town, down to one or two person smaller mom and pop shops or startups. So their needs vary quite a bit. So we try to keep our topics broad yet, as I mentioned, actionable and sort of practical advice. We often bring in other organizations and representatives from local agencies to go over social media case studies that have worked or not worked. We do that a couple times a year, and those are always very, very popular.
All right. And do you actually also discuss the fact that you know, you mentioned that people now have this as part of their title because that's what they are in charge of, the social media for their particular organization. And this is certainly in our business, in the news business, it's one of the growing fields. Like, we may have had some cuts in other areas, but it's growing in terms of, like, they're adding more jobs on the social media platforms and on websites, you know, because so many people access news stories online now. Is that something that you ever talk about, is the kinds of jobs that are out there and the advances that are happening there? Because if you're good at this, you could probably find a job pretty quickly.
You could. It depends on the market. It depends on your skills, of course. But it is certainly a growing area. And being more savvy in this industry is a key. certainly, maybe not the key, but it is a key. So yes, we talk about that quite a bit. An important component to each of our meetings is a networking period. And a lot of people throughout the years have started careers, changed careers through attending these events and meeting employers or becoming to the point where they can hire themselves. So we have lots of those success stories, and we love hearing that.
Right. And Bacon really is your mascot?
We actually have a Bacon sponsor.
So you're a Bacon sponsor.
A Bacon sponsor that provides. I'll give them a shout out. A Stanley's Northeast Barroom brings a big container of freshly cooked bacon to our events every month.
Wow,
it's important to us.
That sounds awesome. All right. Well, let me give the website again. It's smbmsp.org, and it's the.
I'm sorry if I correct you. It's SMB. MSP.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, SMB, MSP. I can't read this evening, I guess, .org. And it's the Social Media Breakfast Minneapolis-St. Paul chapter. Michael Roventeen, thank you so much for joining us. And it sounds like a really cool event. And there's bacon.
Yeah, and there's bacon.
And there's bacon. So I mean, how can you go wrong? And they even have a bacon sponsor. I love it. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good night.
All right, folks. I like that, a bacon sponsor. All right, folks, Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to chat with Erica Rivers from the Minnesota State Parks and Trails Director. She's going to talk about candlelight events at the parks. These are really special events, and Erica will talk about this truly Minnesota tradition and how you can get involved. So that is coming up on News Talk 830. Keep it right here, folks. It is 7:48 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Professor Stephen Scheer of Carleton College. But right now, we want to talk with Erica Rivers with the Minnesota State Parks, and she's actually the Minnesota State Parks and Trails Director, joining us right now to talk about candlelight events. Erica, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Okay, well, tell us about, for people who haven't heard about these events, tell us about them.
Oh, they're so magical. A candlelight events, we have about 30 of them going on across the state here this winter. And what we do is we light up about 1 to 2 miles of hiking trail through our state parks or our state trails. And we light them up with luminaries, either candles or other kinds of lighting. And people just go walking around in the crisp, cool evening air under the stars. And it's just a magical Minnesota experience.
Wow. Okay. And how long has this been going on? This is like a tradition that's been going on for some time, right?
It definitely has become a tradition in Minnesota State Parks and Trails. We've been doing it for about a decade at several of our parks at this point. And it's just expanded all over the state over time. The biggest one we do just happens on New Year's Eve between 4 and 8 o'clock at Fort Snelling State Park, actually. That one we usually see upwards of 3,000 people.
Wow.
Go to that one. But we have them all over the state now, big and small parks all over. You can either snowshoe or just hike. Sometimes some of the parks rent some of the equipment for either skiing or snowshoeing. Otherwise, we can just throw on a nice comfortable pair of boots and head on out and walk.
Wow. Okay. And you've got another big one coming up at Lake Maria State Park, which is gorgeous up in Monticello. Tell us about that.
Yes. That one is coming up on February 2nd. So in about, I guess it's almost a month away. And they'll have luminaries lit on the park trails there too. It's a pretty easy drive from the Twin Cities metropolitan area. So, we welcome folks to come up to that. We actually have another one that night, a little closer on the east side of the Twin Cities at Afton State Park as well.
Oh, that's another beautiful state. And the Minnesota State Parks are so great. Now, do you need to get, you have to get admission to get into the parks, right? Do you need a sticker?
Yes, that's correct. Daily permit is $7, an annual permit is $35. Buy that annual permit now and you can enjoy Minnesota State Parks all year round.
All right. And so that would be good through the entire year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We run our state park permits, the annuals, on an annual basis. So you can, whenever you buy it, say February, it will go for a full 12 months.
Okay. And Yeah. The candle invite, the events, though, are actually free. You just need to get that one-day permit, which is $7, right, to get into the parks. But the events
correct.
Are actually free. All right.
Yep. And the other thing that's nice about those candlelight events is oftentimes at the end, we typically have, you know, a nice little bonfire or campfire going at the end at the visitor center. Sometimes there are refreshments. You can always bring your own snacks, of course, as well.
Right. And is it is the pass, can you buy the pass? Let's say you decide spur of the moment to go to the event on February 2nd at Lake Maria State Park in Monticello. Can you just buy the pass right there, or do you have to go online and buy the pass first?
You can, and the candlelight events, there are always staffed, and so you can buy the pass right when you get there. But you can also buy them online if you prefer to do it that way. Sometimes it's a little easier to buy them online because the events are kind of popular. So you can actually buy it online, put it on your dashboard and of the vehicle, and then just drive right through the entrance gate.
And you know, I see here I've got like a little information sheet in front of me here, and you've got some very reasonable rental fees here for snowshoes and skis and boots and poles.
That's right. A lot of our state parks do offer rental gear, not only in the winter for winter sports, but also in the summertime as well. So if you don't have your own snowshoes and want to give it a try, some of these candlelight opportunities are wonderful opportunities to do that.
Right. And another one that's coming up on February 16th, Whitewater State Park in Altoona.
That's right. That's another beautiful state park. We've also got one January 12th, next weekend, up at Itasca. Folks are heading up in northern Minnesota. Of course, Itasca is a beautiful park. And then very southern, southwestern part of the state, down by Laverne, we have a park called Blue Mounds State Park, which actually has a bison herd in it, too.
Oh, wow. I've never been there. What's the name of that state park?
That one is Blue Mounds State Park. We have actually two bison herds now in the Minnesota State Parks, one at Blue Mounds down by Laverne and the other one at Minneopa State Park near Mankato.
Wow. Okay. And that would be really cool because you can see the bison as you illuminated by the luminaries.
Probably a little earlier in the evening before the sun sets to see those big critters. So they're pretty dark and hard to see in the evening.
And the list, I mean, really, the events are just, I mean, you've got, how many of these total do you do every year?
This year, it looks like we're going to have 30 of them throughout the state, and a lot of them are in state parks. We do have a few that I think that are happening on state trails. I don't have that list in front of me right now, but some of those are happening throughout the state as well. And you can always go on the Minnesota DNR website, mndnr.gov, and we have a wonderful calendar of events on that website, and you can see everything that's going on all over the state.
Right, but you have also, you know, events, Itasca State Park, everywhere, Music Under the Pines. That sounds amazing. Is that a concert? Obviously?
Yep, that one's a concert. Minnesota State Parks has a really fantastic naturalist program throughout the state of Minnesota. We have naturalists working in our state parks, and they offer programs which are, you know, once you get into the park with your daily or annual pass, those are free to the public. There are no costs. Some of our things, like our snowshoe making workshops, for example, those will have just a material fee associated with them.
Make the snowshoes?
Yes. You can look those up on the website, too. There are several of those going on where you can actually make your own snowshoes as well. Then our naturalists do really creative, fun things with bird feeders and making bird feeders and those kind of things this time of year as well, helping our little feathered friends out. And so there's just all kinds of really wonderful opportunities within Minnesota State Parks to connect with nature and to, you know, learn some new things about Minnesota's outdoor heritage. It's pretty wonderful.
I got to ask you about the centennial event at Whitewater State Park on January 26th, the Ghost Camp by Candlelight.
Yes, that one sounds like fun, too, doesn't it?
Yes. What is that?
I actually don't know all that much about that one, but again, we have a really creative naturalist down at Whitewater State Park who does amazing programming. She's got an after-school program down there that she runs and just lots of really creative naturalist programs that are down there.
Yeah.
And a really strong friends group that we work with down at Whitewater State Park as well to offer a variety of programs.
Okay. Another, cool one at the Whitewater State Park, Lovebirds Candlelight Owl Prowl. That sounds very cool.
Is that one on Valentine's Day? I'm wondering.
Just a couple days afterward, yes.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that sounds great. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us, and check it out here. These are parts of the state parks candlelight events. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, folks. You are listening to News Talk 830. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up, we'll talk with Professor Stephen Scheer about the government shutdown. How long will it last?